I thought this was pretty dramatic here. As I said here, I kind of mentioned this on the show too the other day, but I tweeted this out. Ben Shapiro's era of online dominance is officially over. His career is basically dead. The only path forward he has at this point is securing a gig on Fox News, where he really belongs. And I do think he'd do really well on Fox News. I think he'd be a big hit on Fox News with a lot of the Fox News audience that's not as hung up on Israel and Epstein, you know, some of the more like old school George Bush era kind of Republicans that, again, aren't as online. I do think he'd be a pretty big hit there. But I do think his online career is basically over. And you see that with people like Megyn Kelly reading the tea leaves and realizing that it's going to be in their best interest not to actually be friends with or protecting Ben Shapiro, who was just at a Megyn Kelly live event recently. And Ben Shapiro said something which Megyn Kelly here is going to have to now, you know, after the fact, kind of, I guess, disagree with or like fact check. You guys will see. But she's clearly trying to separate herself from Ben Shapiro. And even though she just did an event with him, she sees the tea leaves. She sees the fact that his career is totally falling apart. And she does not want to be seen as someone that's in any way aiding him or protecting him in this moment.
I'm excited to take a look.
He said that Candace has been claiming Erica Kirk was behind the murder of Charlie, which I had not heard. And I was taken aback because that seems like something I would have heard. It's so crazy. And I have since learned it is not true. Candace has not made that claim. And in fact, I've now seen several clips of Candace specifically defending Erica Kirk and saying she would never make a claim like that about Erica, and that she, you know, she is open-minded to other people at Turning Point. That's obvious. She's been making that point. I had heard that point. But she's specifically been defending Erica Kirk. And she's been saying she does not think that of Erica. And in fact, if you read her comments, she's under pressure to make comments about Erica. And so far, what I've seen, she hasn't. So thank you for that question.
He said, so yeah, in the previous appearance with Ben Shapiro at the same, you know, tour, Ben Shapiro had said that Candace Owens is incorrigible because she's been blaming the death of Charlie Kirk on Erica Kirk. In this next appearance, Megyn Kelly takes it upon herself to correct Ben Shapiro, you know, who's not there to speak for himself, basically separate herself from that narrative, defend Candace Owens, who's obviously in the middle of a huge war with Ben Shapiro. And yeah, basically just throw Shapiro under the bus. Which is, you know, I don't feel bad about Ben Shapiro, but it's also true that people have pointed out that, yeah, Candace Owens has obviously been implying that Erica Kirk is up to no good, or that in some way she's shady or sus or compromised. So it's not a huge stretch, what Ben Shapiro was saying, which makes it all the more funny that Megyn Kelly is now, you know, distancing herself in the way she is.
Oh yeah. It just shows that the writing is on the wall for Ben Shapiro. And, you know, we had a fun little debate. You know, I think he could end up at CBS, but I broadly agree with you that his time in the sun is over.
Cable news in general.
1,000,000%. Yeah. He can't be, we talked about it a lot. He's kind of like the last of the Paul Ryan era of the Republican Party. He never really became a Trumper. He kind of weathered the storm a little bit, but now it's too much. And obviously the Israel policy and his commitment to Zionism has been his absolute death knell. No arguments there. I think that's true. And what I think is even more funny about this, really hilarious, we talk about the Diary of a Wimpy Kid book series a little bit more than probably any podcast on earth, but it came out right when Gavin and I were kids. We were the perfect age group for it, and I remember it a lot. And you know what? There are some good references in there every once in a while. And I think the perfect example for what's going on with Ben Shapiro, if we could give it a little bit of a schoolyard analogy, that would be he touched the stinky cheese. Ben Shapiro marrying himself to Zionism, making himself the loudest, most vocal soldier for Israel. That gave him the cheese touch, man. It gave him the cheese touch. And now anybody who comes into contact with him, if he touches him, I'm going to have the cheese touch. Okay. And Megyn Kelly, she's out here. She's saying, guys, I know what you're thinking. You were like, does Megyn Kelly have the cheese touch? I'm here to tell you right now. Look at my hands. I've never touched the stinky cheese. All right. The bad stinky cheese man came because I was trying to be polite and build bridges, but I said, you know what? Keep your stinky cheese hands away from me. Don't give me the cheese touch, because Megyn Kelly is also at a precarious place in her media career. She has to decide, which way, Western woman, do I go with the Candace Owens and do I go with the Nick Fuentes? Clearly, that seems to be the choice that she's making with the Tucker Carlsons, etc. She got chewed out by Tucker Carlson a little bit. We reacted to that the other day on one of her pit stops, but she has to decide, am I going to become irrelevant? Am I going to become like a Glenn Beck who just has my own The Blaze and I make content for a small audience of people and I just decide I'm never going to have cultural relevance again? I'll just try and take deranged ad deals and keep my lifestyle like similarly comfortable. That's a choice for her. I don't think she'll take it, but it's a choice that she has. Her other choice is to continue to double down with what she's doing here. Never, ever fuck with Cheese Touch Ben again, and then continue to embrace Candace Owens, Nick Fuentes, and Tucker Carlson, who I 100% believe are going to be the three horsemen of the next general election cycle. I think they're going to be the big, big power media figures for the Republican Party.
Yep, 100%. And obviously, you know, as Ben Shapiro goes down, Nick Fuentes is on the rise, and this has resulted in a lot of people, calling for a debate. And obviously, Fuentes is adding to that by offering to debate Ben Shapiro, saying, I'll debate you at any time, anywhere, bring it on. You won't, you're a bitch, you would lose, and you know that. But, you know, this has a lot of people pointing out. I was trying to find it, but remember that one chick, Pearl, who was like just a misogynist.
Oh,
chick.
Just pearly things.
Yeah. I saw her tweeting about this. She was like, and she actually made a pretty good point. She was like, you know what? Ben Shapiro made his whole fucking career based on debating. That was his whole thing. He was like, we'll change people's minds by debating them and the power of debate and the, all this, you know, fetishization of debating, right? And discourse. So why isn't he eager to debate Nick Fuentes? You know, he should be like, come on, bro. Let's fucking go. I'll smack you down. I'll destroy your ideas. I'll win in the marketplace of ideas. What happened? Why is Ben Shapiro not just taking him on and taking him down? He should have done it years ago if he's such a fact machine, such a intimidating debate, bro. So my question, Zach, is kind of like we were talking about with Joe Rogan. Do you think Ben Shapiro gets desperate enough as his career continues to fall apart? Do you think he gets desperate enough and B, deluded enough to think that he actually could powerfully destroy Nick Fuentes, that he could actually win back some of the relevance and popularity that he's sacrificed, to Nick Fuentes by actually defeating him in a debate? Do you think he's going to go that route or just keep ignoring him and acting like he's on his high horse?
It's tough, right? I don't have like a bold yes or no because I could kind of see both outcomes. I completely agree with you. Bad idea for Ben to debate Nick Fuentes.
Oh, yeah.
Bad idea Terrible. For him to debate Nick Fuentes. Why? Because he would lose.
Yeah.
Because Nick Fuentes would be able to, without a shadow of a doubt, convince every single person watching that Ben Shapiro is bought and paid for by the Israeli lobby and by out-of-touch corporate interests, right? And Ben Shapiro is going to make the case that Nick Fuentes is racist, and everybody's going to be like, yeah, that's what we like about him.
Yeah.
So it's a fucking lose-lose for Ben Shapiro. There's no way for him to come out there and win the argument. They're going to be like, he's going to be like, this guy hates Jews. He denied the Holocaust. And they're going to be like, yeah, we like that about him. We hate Jews too. We hate you. All right, that's the problem with being a conservative broadcaster, right? I mean, Ben Shapiro cuddled up with all of the most hateful, bigoted, racist people on planet Earth to build the Daily Wire, to build his platform, and he was totally okay with all of it, right? But then he never really paid attention to history, Gavin, because he must have forgot that the Ku Klux Klan also hated Jewish people, that ultimately what he was doing was he was cuddling up to a bunch of white supremacist Christian nationalists. All right. And once they felt like they'd adequately won the argument when it came to, well, you know, white nationalism, they became Christian nationalists and they started to antagonize Jewish people, not just Muslim people, not just people of, you know, different skin tones who had different religions than them, but people who were white people and also a different religion than them, and smearing them and slandering them and spreading all kinds of vicious conspiracies about them. Right. And Ben Shapiro lost his audience to a guy that was spreading all of that shit, right? So there's no way for him to credibly debate him, but it's going to be compelling for him to do so because he's going to see it as the opportunity to win back his audience, right? To win everybody back. But I think that the smart move is to just understand that he needs to wait his time out. That right now Israel is way too fucking unpopular for him to ever be mainstream popular. And he needs to decide if he's going to, you know, wait for it to come around. If it ever comes back around again, fine. But he can't engage with these people who are going to constantly dunk on him and constantly get W's by pointing out that he's just a shill for a foreign country.
Yeah. 100%, which is why he really belongs on Fox News with Mark Levin and, you know, the people that can just be shamelessly pro-Israel without having to actually debate their online counterparts. But yeah, let's just, again, another reason why I think that Ben Shapiro would totally lose a debate is because, again, just compare their communicative styles and which one is more in vogue right now online. Here's Nick Fuentes, and then we'll play a quick clip of Ben Shapiro.
Roy Burbano 07 sent $50. Hey, Ben, keep Nick Fuentes' name out your mouth. You're irrelevant now. Love you, Nick, less than three.
Well, and he should debate me. If he feels so strongly, then debate me. He won't. He knows he won't. You know he won't. I know he won't. Come and debate me then. I have 55,000 live viewers. How many live viewers do you get? He knows that if he debates me, it'll be the most watched debate in politics in 10 years. It'll be bigger than the Trump-Biden debate. It'll be the most watched debate since Trump debated Hillary Clinton. He knows he will lose. He knows that everyone will rally to my side, and he knows that Israel First is over. That's why he'll never do it. But the offer stands. You want to play my clips? Call me out. You want to hide? I'm right here. I'm right here. I will debate you anytime, anywhere. Bring it on. You won't. You're a bitch. You would lose. You know that.
Ooh, so brutal. And again, he's a you know, a youthful communicator. He's funny. He knows what he's doing. Compare that to how out of touch Ben Shapiro has become, how condescending and patronizing and unbearable this piece of shit is. Again, begging the question, who even is your fucking audience? You're supposed to be like, at one point he was sold as like the voice of the youth, you know, the cool kids philosopher or whatever. But now it literally sounds like he's you know, crafting his message for boomers, for like 55, 65 year old people that are really bitter with like the fact that these, why don't the kids just go get a job and save some money like I did when I was their age or whatever. Like, that's the kind of crowd he's talking to now. Take a look at this bullshit.
If you're a young person and you can't afford to live here, then maybe you should not live here. I mean, that is a real thing. Yeah, I know that we've now grown up in a society that says that you deserve to live where you grew up. But the reality is that the history of America is almost literally the opposite of that. The history of America is you go to a place where there is opportunity. And if the opportunities are limited here and they're not changing, then you really should try to think about other places where you have better opportunities. If you're a young person and you can't afford to live here.
So, yeah. Disgusting.
I mean, one, can we talk about the irony of a dude that is a fucking Israeli simp saying that shit? Oh, yeah, I have a right to return to Israel, and I have a right to kill every Palestinian in my way. I have a right to steal their homes, but you don't have a right to afford to live where you were actually born and fucking grew up, you crazy person. And yeah, not only that, I feel like it's important to point out he had to run all the way across the pond to a foreigner's podcast to talk shit on our country. Conservatives used to hate when you do that kind of thing. Just ask
wait, which show is this on?
Oh, Trigonometry.
Oh, they're Trigonometry, British, right, guys. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just complete bullshit. It's showing, again, he is interested in representing capital. He is interested in representing the establishment, and he's interested in representing Israel. All of those things are horribly unpopular on the left and the right and the center. So there's no base for him. There's no audience for him. And Nick knows it. Everybody knows it. Ben Shapiro knows it. He's basically like a candle. If you remove the oxygen, right, the flame's just going to slowly go out.
Yep. I guess my final word on the subject is just that I really hope the debate happens between Fuentes and Ben Shapiro. I mean, part of me doesn't, because it will facilitate the further rise of Nick Fuentes, because he's right. He would win the debate. It would, you know, draw so many more eyeballs to his message of explicit Nazism. So I, in all honesty, I actually don't hope that it happens, because it would be huge for Fuentes and it would really elevate him to another level. It would create the narrative that, you know, he is the new Ben Shapiro, that he now has taken over that role that Ben Shapiro played 10, 15 years ago. But as a commentator who would get for one glorious day to react to that footage of Ben Shapiro's utter destruction, yes, I do hope that it happens. That would be glorious to watch. It would truly represent the end of Ben Shapiro's online, you know, dominance or career or whatever. Although, you know, he is a good debater, but I do think that, yeah, Fuentes would probably win that exchange, and it would be pretty brutal, because again, it's not like it's not like Ben Shapiro really has any, like, what is he going to do, gaslight you about how he's not Israel first when he clearly fucking is? There are some issues where, you know, he probably could win a debate against Nick Fuentes, but on that specific one, which Fuentes would force the whole conversation to be about, it's kind of like Trump with the Epstein stuff. What really can you say to get out of it? You are backed in a corner. You are guilty. Like, what can you say in your defense?
No, I completely agree with you. I think there might be niche areas where if you just set them up in a proper old school debate setting, Ben Shapiro could flex his ability to, you know, be a fax machine, to do the whole rapid fire artillery of information at people to try and debunk your stuff. But when Ben Shapiro is debating anybody that knows their that knows the basics of the situation, right? That can hold their own at all, even at a baseline surface level of what's happening and what Ben Shapiro has been saying over the last 2.5 years. And even before that, it's a fucking worthless life. It's like debate. It's like playing against the house in blackjack. The deck is so stacked against Ben Shapiro. It doesn't matter how good of a debater it is. It doesn't matter how good of a blackjack player you are. Eventually, if you're playing the house, you're going to go belly up. And Nick Fuentes has all the cards stacked in his favor. You know, he is going to deal himself from the bottom of the deck, and it is going to punish Ben Shapiro, and it would be humiliated. And do you like how Nick Fuentes has clearly learned from Donald Trump? He's promising that it's going to be the biggest debate ever. He's like, even bigger than Donald Trump and Joe Biden. It's going to be the biggest debate since Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton, which I have no numbers in front of me, but I do remember when Donald Trump first debated Hillary Clinton, and it was all anybody was fucking talking about. So,
oh yeah,
there's no way that this has even a fucking snowball's chance in hell of getting close to that or the Donald Trump Joe Biden one debate, but it would still be massive. And you do have to recognize the showmanship that he's clearly riffing from Donald Trump, who's our president.
Yep, 100%. I agree. It wouldn't be that big, but it would be pretty huge. Like, outside of the literal presidential debates, I do think it would probably be the single biggest, most high profile debate outside of the literal presidential debate stage.
Bigger than Hassan v. Ethan, even.
Yeah, definitely bigger than that. Although that was fucking huge. That was crazy big, unfortunately, because it was unbearable. But
yeah, you got a headache, I remember.
Oh, it went on for like 5 hours, bro. That shit was unbearable. But yeah, I mean, crazy shit. It's going to be interesting to see if, again, Ben Shapiro actually does get desperate enough to accept this offer, or delusional enough to think that he can actually defeat Nick Fuentes and gain back some of that relevance and popularity that he sacrificed over the last couple of years, specifically really since Israel has become such a hot topic, you know, and then everyone has been looking back through his career and, you know, pointing out all of these disgusting things he said. And that's the other thing. It's like, as much as Ben Shapiro wants to pearl clutch about Nick Fuentes' bigotry, and as much as he wants to pearl clutch about Nick Fuentes' anti-Semitism, if he was actually faced with Fuentes in a debate, Fuentes could just be like, well, fucking 10 years ago, you were talking about how the Palestinians just want to live in sewage and bomb shit. Therefore, Israel has a right to genocide them. So you're going to sit here and fucking pearl clutch about my bigotry when your whole fucking career is based on saying some of the most insanely disgusting, vile, Arab sentiment when it comes to this exact same conflict that you're now pretending to be against racism and bigotry in the context of? I mean, there you go. What do you say to that? How do you win that debate when he has that in his back pocket?
That's honestly the ultimate reverse Uno card right there. It's like, bitch, you did the same exact thing. You just want people to care about it because it's you now. And honestly, he did that. He did that shit. That's a very fair point. I think that if a leftist made that point to Ben Shapiro without the whole, like, I also cheerlead for genocide, so j'accuse, but just like, bro, how are you going to have any kind of credibility now to call out Nick Fuentes, to call out the members of your party? He keeps trying to, and nobody will back him up. Matt Walsh, he pays him. He's not backing him up. None of these guys are coming out of the woodwork to defend Ben Shapiro. They all know he's chopped, right? They all know it's over for him. And it's because of exactly that. Not only is he a number one fucking stooge for Israel that anybody can think of, he's proudly said it. You can trace all of his financial ties. Everything's clear as day. He's bought and sold by the same people who are bought and sold by Israel, right? And there's no way to run around that, in addition to the fact that he's already made a bunch of genocidal statements. He's out of touch. Working class people who are white nationalists don't even fuck with him, right? Because he says a bunch of shit like, you don't deserve to live in the neighborhood you grew up in. Like, Yeah. I mean, I saw Shuan Head, who's gone pretty much full Republican now, tweeting about how this is why people like Ben Shapiro are losing relevance. And then she linked to Tucker Carlson talking about how our economy is super fucking broken and that a bunch of young people who are trying their best and who are going to college and who are doing all of these things still can't afford rent. And if you can't afford rent as one person, how do we possibly expect these people to start families? Because then you need to have a place with extra bedrooms, with more food, all these kinds of things. And it was just demonstrating, right, the bridge in the Republican Party and how you talk about these kinds of issues.
Yeah, 100%. Speaking of Tucker, Zach, you know, he recently appeared at one of these Megyn Kelly events too. I guess she's on this tour or whatever. It's been generating a lot of great fucking content for shows like ours to react to. But this was pretty funny because one of these events obviously recently had Tucker. We reacted to a clip from it the other day of Tucker kind of shutting down Megyn Kelly when Megyn Kelly dared to question why he would platform a Nazi like Nick Fuentes. But this is another funny moment where Tucker decides to tell a story, revisit a story, retell a story that we've had a little bit of fun with on this show before. I'm interested to see him doubling down here because I thought we might never hear about this again, that he might just, you know, be like, yeah, I'm going to leave that in the past. But no, apparently he's reintegrating this into his routine and he's breaking it out the hits. So let's take a look here and react once again.
And I go to bed.
To Tucker Carlson's harrowing tale.
And then I go to bed with my wife and four dogs who sleep in the bed. My wife said four children. My dogs are hunting dogs. All five of them wake up like that. Like we have no home invaders in my house. I wake up at 2:30 in the morning. I check my, and I couldn't breathe at all. My throat was closed. It wasn't like I was apnea or was strong as I couldn't breathe. So I get up, I stand in the doorway of our bedroom, and I'm like, wow, I'm dying. I could feel myself starting to gray out. And then I started walking in the backyard, and then it slowly came back. Like, my throat kind of opened up a little bit. I was, like, really weirded out. I walk back in, and my wife wakes up. She goes, what is going on? I said, I don't know. I can't breathe. I feel better now. And all of a sudden, I had this horrible pain underneath my arms, like on the side of my chest. Like, bad. I thought I'd been, like, ripped with a knife or something. It just was very intense. So I go into the bathroom. I flip on the light, and I have claw marks on both sides, on right and left side on my ribs, and they're bleeding. And they're literally claw marks, you know, four on either side. I put my fingers in them, don't fit my fingers, and I sleep on my side. So how could, and by the way, no one woke up. So I show my wife, and she's like, oh my gosh. And then I have this like crazy intense desire to read the Bible. So I read the Bible and I pass out in 2 minutes and I wake up and the next morning I thought, man, did I have a wild dream? And then I see blood in my sheets and I go in the bathroom and I have these bloody marks. And my wife goes, I think you were attacked by some supernatural being. And I was like trying to be logical about it. And I was like, yeah, I definitely was. And then I called one of my producers who's like, oh yeah, well, that's pretty common. I was like, what? And I've had a couple other experiences.
Isn't that crazy that like his delusions were not like, usually if you say like, hey, I'm hearing voices in my head or I'm seeing demons, like the people around you in your immediate life will be like, yo, whoa, like it sounds like you need to get some help. Probably sounds like you probably like seeing things or going through a mental issue. Everyone in his life, assuming that any of this story is true, everyone in his immediate life, his family and his business partners or whatever, immediately affirmed his delusion and were like, yep, it was a demon. You got attacked by a demon. It's definitely something supernatural going on. Happens all the time. They're all just affirming each other's fucking insanity, which is truly crazy. But the fact that he keeps telling the story is wild, right? Because it's so obviously not fucking true. And nothing about it is even like remotely, like none of it even remotely suggests proof that he was attacked by a demon. He's literally just ripping off Rosemary's Baby when Mia Farrow wakes up after having been raped by Satan. And she has like, literally, as he describes, scratch marks on her body. And shit, he's literally just ripping that off. But yeah, what a crazy thing to keep talking about.
I think my best guess at what he's doing, and he's been testing the waters on this for a while, right? But I think that Tucker Carlson was savvy enough to understand that for a while, the Republican Party was in a secular moment. And I think a lot of the MAGA movement originally, before he had the Mike Pence, you know, olive branch, was a secular right-wing movement, right? Donald Trump wasn't a particularly religious guy. Their religion was Donald Trump. It wasn't Christianity.
I mean, he's picking Mike Pence is
what I said before. He gave the olive branch to Donald or to Mike Pence.
I missed that. Sorry.
No, it's okay. But what I was saying was before he gave the olive. That's why he did that, right? Was to secure the evangelical vote. But his initial poll, his rabid base, his first rise through the Republican Party, it was a secular one. And Tucker Carlson, I think, saw that. And I think over time, what's happened is that he's realized that the winds have shifted and we're re-entering this kind of Christian era of the Republican Party where it's mainstream. Guys like Nick Fuentes, they're talking about the Bible more. People like Candace Owens, they're talking about the Bible more. They are rooting their politics in a Christian politics. We see that obviously with people like Emily Jasinski as well. She's risen in prominence and she's rooting her conservatism deeply in Christian roots. And I think what Tucker is seeing is a lane for him to be like, I am a credible guy. I can be one of the most religious right wingers. And then I still don't have to go, you know, full Fuentes. I can be friendly with Fuentes. I can be friendly with Candace. But I think he sees this as a lane for him as the Republican Party lurches, in my view, more towards that, you know, Bible thumper thing that they seemingly left behind for a little bit.
There, sir. The Vanguard will be there.